Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 21 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday, the 23rd of May, 2025. I'm Andrew, your presenter, and joined again this week by newsreader Alison. And in the news this week, the wheels come off for the ambulance service. A new councillor in the spotlight already, as well as a Yarmouth MP yet again. The Out There Festival returns. And Banksy grabs some more headlines. All this coming your way during the next hour or so, and with no birthdays this week, it's straight on with the first part of the news. Alison, would you like to start us off, please?
Thank you, and hello everyone. The region's largest NHS trust has been forced to take dozens of ambulances off the road because they were accidentally ordered with the wrong wheels. In an embarrassing blunder, the East of England Ambulance Service Trust mistakenly purchased a fleet of 75 new MAN and Ford ambulances, fitted with steel rather than alloy wheels. Because of the speeds at which the vehicles have to be driven, the steel ones are not suitable. To correct the error, bosses have had to spend £133,500 retrofitting new wheels, forcing the vehicles off the road and putting lives at risk by reducing cover. Trust bosses had identified alloy wheels as being preferable to steel due to an issue with plastic indicator tabs, which are used to tell when wheel nuts are loose. Previously, heat caused by high speeds associated with emergency vehicle driving with steel wheels had caused these plastic indicators to melt. As a result, ambulances with steel wheels had to be taken out of action more regularly for manual checks. Alloy wheels reduced this need, but when the new fleet was ordered, E-East's procurement team omitted to specify alloys from the order, and the vehicles were instead delivered with steel wheels. An E-East spokesman said, "Many vehicles in our fleet have used steel wheels, and there is no suggestion steel wheels on ambulances cannot withstand 999 response driving conditions. We have retrofitted alloy wheels to some of our ambulances, as they were not included in the original procurement due to an error. There is no additional cost than if the wheels had been fitted before delivery. This work will be done in a phased approach, so that we will always have the appropriate number of vehicles to serve our patients." The debacle has been criticised by union bosses, who have questioned why more checks were not done before purchasing the vehicles. Glenn Carrington, Unison's branch chairman at the Trust, said, "This is a costly mistake at a time the Trust is supposed to be looking after every penny. Overtime is an essential part of the paycheck for many staff, so it is a real kick in the teeth to see the Trust having to spend over £130,000 fixing this error. This is the latest in a long line of fleet blunders which are costing the Trust money and hitting its ability to service the public. The Trust urgently needs to get a grip on this fleet crisis." Donna Thomas, GMB regional organiser, added, "This embarrassing and avoidable error shows a lack of due diligence and proper processes in E-East. Vehicles were unable to enter frontline service due to management mistakes, yet another delay to frontline response. This is a trust which is currently subject to an improvement notice from the CQC, due in part to Category 2 ambulance response times. The £133,500 spent on this retrofit should have been used to fund clinical staff on the road. There must be accountability for this error. The trust insists that the £133,500 cost of retrofitting the vehicles was a planned cost as part of ordering the new vehicles. The ambulances bought due issues with a previous fleet have been delivered in phases since January 2024. 12 were delivered in January 2024, 10 in June 2024, 5 in August 2024, and 15 in February this year and 1 in March. A further 32 are also expected to arrive in due course, but will need retrofitting. The Trust added that all future deliveries will be fitted with alloy wheels and not require retrofitting.
Norfolk's newest councillor has found himself in hot water just days after he was voted in after social media posts emerged in which he said Islam should be banned and Muslims deported. James Jimmy Lee, who was elected to represent Acle for Reform at a Broadland Council by-election last Thursday, is at the centre of a row over the messages on his X or Twitter account. Officials at the authority said they were aware of concerns about the posts and that Mr. Lee would be receiving training to ensure that from now on he would abide by its code of conduct. Both Mr. Lee and Reform UK have declined to comment, but his X account and posts have been deleted since the EDP approached the councillor and the party. Opponents on the council have described the messages as racist and Islamophobic, and they said they raised questions over Reform's vetting of its candidates. In April 2024, Mr. Lee responded to a comment on X describing Islam as a divisive fundamentalist hate cult. He said this was a lovely and accurate post. In another post later that month, he replied to a set of images featuring politicians of black and Asian heritage, including Rishi Sunak and Sadiq Khan. Mr. Lee's response said, quote, "We are being infiltrated to the very core of our heritage," and described them as the enemy in waiting. Another post Mr. Lee shared in the same month showed an image of a Muslim man being kicked and proclaimed, "The only way to save Europe was mass deportation." Mr. Lee again replied, "Said it for years." In June 2024, he replied to a post asking whether Islam should be, quote, "made illegal in the UK," and he said, "Yes." His posts have been met with criticism from other members of Broadland Council, which is run by a rainbow coalition of the Lib Dems, Labour and Green Party members. Natasha Harpley, leader of the Labour group, said, "I do wonder how many people would have voted for Mr. Lee if they knew he had made Islamophobic and racist comments. These views are not representative of the majority of people in Broadland or the council as a whole." Reform has a history of not vetting its candidates and doesn't seem to be bothered about doing its due diligence. Mr. Lee, who is a grandfather, was born in Edinburgh and moved to Norfolk in 1977 to begin a career in the military. Prior to his election, he proclaimed to understand local life and pledged to proudly serve the community he cares so deeply about. The by-election was called following the resignation of Conservative Lana Hempsall, who has been district councillor in Acle since 2011. The vote was thrown into chaos at the last minute after the Greens ditched their candidate at the 11th hour due to concerns about his behaviour during his time as a Labour activist. Mr. Lee was elected with a vote of 322, a comfortable margin ahead of Conservatives Vincent Tapp with 208, the Greens' Peter Carter with 200, Labour's Emma Covington with 186, and Lib Dem Philip Matthew, who received 54 votes. A spokesman for the council said, "After his election on Thursday, Mr. Lee will now go through the introduction and training process of becoming a councillor. Part of that process will include training in his responsibilities as a councillor, and as with all councillors, he will be expected to abide by the Broadland District Council Code of Conduct." During a set of by-elections earlier this month, David Bick became Reform UK's first Norfolk County Councillor when he triumphed in the Thetford West Division, previously held by South West Norfolk MP Terry Jeremy. And a few hours later, former Conservative Councillor Julian Kirk became the second when he won the by-election he had triggered. The party also secured its third member on the Breckland Council after Michael Westman won the Thetford Priory Ward from Labour. However, Reform suffered a painful defeat in Norwich, where its candidate lost to Labour by just one vote.
Anglian Water, which has hundreds of thousands of customers in Norfolk, has been fined a record £1.42 million after failures saw flakes and powder enter the water supply. The Drinking Water Inspectorate, the DWI, said the company used unapproved plastic-based products to externally coat pipework submerged within drinking water tanks at four different sites between June and December 2021. The watchdog said the coatings broke down into flakes and powder, which entered the water supply. The company reported the failures to the DWI before pleading guilty at Northampton Crown Court. Marcus Rink, DWI's chief inspector, said public health and drinking water quality must be the highest priority and there can be no compromise. We've taken firm action in the public interest to ensure the company has removed all non-compliant material so that customers can remain confident in their water supplies. DWI said Anglian Water has rectified all of the issues across its network. But Environment Secretary Steve Reed said contamination of drinking water on any scale is scandalous and a complete disgrace. The record £1.4 million fine handed down sends a clear signal that this criminal behaviour is unacceptable. The company pleaded guilty to 5 offences under the Water Supply (brackets Water Quality) Regulations 2016, which mandates that only tested, approved and safe materials come into contact with drinking water. An Anglian Water spokesman apologised and said the company accepted the judgment. He said the procedures we had in place fell short and as a result we have since invested significantly to improve these and have shared our learnings across the water industry. Protecting the water supply of our customers could not be more fundamental to our business. This is reflected in the fact that we have not had a drinking water prosecution in over 20 years. Despite the breach, there was no evidence of any contamination of the water supply, and the judge agreed, based on independent expert reports, that the risk to customers was very low. We continue to work with our regulator to ensure best practice is followed at all times. The water company was recently criticised over delays in construction of hundreds of miles of pipe between North Lincolnshire and Norfolk.
The exit of 3 senior officers from Norfolk County Council cost the authority almost £600,000 in severance packages because a shake-up meant there were no suitable jobs for them. The packages for the trio, which include redundancy payments and pension strain costs, were agreed after the council made changes in its children's services department. Pension strain cost refers to the extra money the council has to pay the pension fund to cover the shortfall from the pension being paid out earlier than anticipated. The identities of the officers were not revealed, with the council citing data protection requirements, but the exit packages were worth £228,834, £226,440 and £123,203. The costs were announced at a meeting of the Conservative-controlled Council's Employment Committee, where all such packages worth more than £100,000, which have to be agreed by Council Leader Kay Mason-Billig and Chief Executive Tom McCabe, must be reported. Officers said the exits in the financial year of 2024-25 came about as part of a £4 million transformation programme in the Council's Children's Services Department. Officers said they were unsuccessful at being redeployed as they have a unique skill set and a level of seniority which made it impossible to redeploy them within the council. We were unable to meet the same salary to reutilise their skills and they were not easily transferable to any other senior vacancies available. In 2023-24, exit packages were agreed for 149 members of the staff, costing nearly £2.9 million. And the year before, 96 workers left at a cost of just over £1 million. Brian Watkins, leader of the opposition Liberal Democrat group at County Hall, said he was concerned over the increasing departures and costs. He said he feared, with the impending reorganisation of local councils in Norfolk, which would see all 8 scrapped and new ones formed, that more staff could choose to lead. Kay Mason-Billig said, "The last thing we want to do is lose valued staff. Those jobs are still going to need to be done, whether it's under a 2-tier system or under a unitary system, so we can give staff reassurance that we are still going to need people in those very, very important roles."
Parents of children at a school threatened by closure have vowed to fight for its future, despite it receiving 0 applications for reception intake in September. A merger between Cantley Primary School and neighbouring Threethorpe Community Primary School is currently being considered by the Federation in charge of both sites. Under the proposals, Cantley would permanently close down, with all of its pupils transferred 3 miles away to Freethorpe. Bosses say falling birth rates and a lack of housing developments nearby have left Cantley unviable, with projections suggesting it will just have 17 pupils on its roll from September. The school also failed to receive a single application for new intakes for reception. Dwindling numbers mean if it were to stay open, all age groups would be taught in a single class. But parents have vowed to fight for its future and accused the AIM Federation of failing to do enough to attract new pupils. Matthew Lawson, whose 6-year-old daughter Fern attends Cantley, has started a petition against the move, which has been signed more than 250 times. He said, "It very much feels like there has been no effort to get children in. It seems like the numbers have just been left to dwindle, rather than looking to promote the school. I don't think you can justify keeping a school open with 17 pupils, but what you can do is not give it the death throes when things get a little rocky." The consultation, which opened earlier this month, will run until noon on Monday, 16th of June. Mr. Lawson added, "As parents, we can't not fight this. We've got to show our children that you can stand up to these kinds of things. It will be an important lesson for them to learn." David Hopkins, the school's executive head teacher, said, "Unfortunately, we just don't feel we can deliver a broad enough curriculum with the numbers as they are at Cantley."
A Lithuanian drug dealer, who was the holder of a phone for a County Lines gang, was found with bags of white powder, which turned out to be sugar. Zydrunas Gubis had a role of some command in the Star Line, a county line which was supplying drugs to addicts in Great Yarmouth. Norwich Crown Court heard Gubis, aged 28, was caught after siege of other addicts' phones led to police to conduct surveillance on a property in Caister, which was found to be linked to the drugs line. Oliver Haswell, prosecuting, said Gubis was arrested and found with the phone and SIM card for the drugs line, as well as drugs. The phone had been sending out classic county line type bulk messages. Gubis, who has been in the UK for 6 years and worked at a chicken factory, appeared in court on Friday after he admitted being concerned in the supply of cocaine and amphetamines between June and November 2024. He resides at Poppy Avenue in Caister, and he also admitted possession with intent to supply cocaine after the white powder was found. But Mr. Haswell said the powder at his address was found to be, quote, nothing more than sugar. Separately, Gubis, who spoke through a Lithuanian interpreter, also admitted a fray and possession of a bladed article following a confrontation with another group of males in Yarmouth on January 22nd, 2022. Gubis punched another man to the floor during the incident and also produced a knife. Jailing Gubis for a total of 3 years and 9 months, Judge Alice Robinson said the defendant had been the holder of the drugs line, who had clearly been involved for financial gain. She said the affray had been a serious offence during which he had had a blade in his hand. Michael Clare, mitigating, accepted the defendant had a significant role in the drugs matters and had some command in the operation. He said he had got involved trying to feed his own drugs habit, but had pleaded guilty to the offences which he had committed, having made immediate admissions in the interview. In terms of the affray, Mr. Clare said that a group of men, quote, emboldened by liquor, had attacked his friend and his house. He said Gubis went to help, but foolishly armed himself with a bladed article, which he thought would frighten the attackers off.
This has been the driest spring on record, and Suffolk Fire and Rescue Service has dealt with twice the number of calls it had last year. There were 104 calls to fires in the open in March and 132 in April. So far in May, there have been 60 after 2 weeks, almost the same number for the entire month in 2024. However, fire chiefs will be very anxious to avoid the situation in the summer of 2022. In July and August that year, there were more than 560 calls to outdoor fires. Steve Wiles, Suffolk County Council's Cabinet Member for Public Protection, said, "As we begin to enjoy some warmer weather, there is the very real threat and increased risk of wildfire starting across our county. Already this year, the UK has seen significantly more wildfires than in previous years. so it's essential we take the necessary precautions to prevent wildfire spread in Suffolk. Dry vegetation, particularly after recent years of high growth, creates ideal conditions for fires to start and spread rapidly. The National Fire Chiefs Council has issued an amber wildfire alert for our region, and Suffolk Fire and Rescue Service is on high alert, working closely with landowners and monitoring high-risk areas.
And in keeping with that, flames and thick smoke could be seen rising from open land at Belton Common on Sunday. The nearby Caldecott Hall and golf course suffered no damage in the blaze, but fire crews from across the county were sent to the scene, with appliances attending from Great Yarmouth, Galston, Carrow, Sproston, Stalham, Aylsham and Loddon. The control unit from Wyndham and water carriers from Faken and Heatherset also joined the effort. Crews tackled the fire using hose reel jets and handheld appliances. The incident was first reported at 2:45 on Sunday, with the fire service at the scene until 9:35 p.m. No injuries have been yet reported and is not known what yet caused the blaze. Photos taken from the air show the smoke rising from flames in the woods on Belton Common. A spokesperson for nearby Caldecott Hall confirmed there was no damage to the venue or the golf course. Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service has been approached for more information about the cause of the fire.
A new local radio station featuring much-loved former presenters has announced the launch date of its first show. Broadland Radio has announced that it will be broadcasting with presenters in just a matter of weeks on the 2nd of June. The station will be bringing back some familiar voices to the airwaves, with presenters Stephen Bumfrey and Rob Chandler among those hosting shows. Managing director of the station, Bob Norman, said the work has been continuing in terms of trying to sort sponsors and making sure that we're all ready to go on the 2nd of June. It's nice having a date to target, and now I'm more able to prioritise work, so it has been a relief in some ways, but I've now got to make it work by the 2nd of June. The presenter lineup, in particular those two, Chandler and Bumfrey, is something that has been getting a lot of positive feedback. They've been getting a lot of mention and recall, which has been pleasing. Mr. Norman himself initially retired from radio back in 2021, but says he started Broadland Radio as something to give back to the people of Norfolk. He said, "I will have to fund the early trade at a personal cost to me. I'll be receiving no salary from this and have no plans to. The aim is to make listeners feel good about living in Norfolk, playing upbeat music and hearing familiar voices, and to feel a real connection. What I absolutely want to do is bring local radio back to the area. Most of it has disappeared, with presenters losing their jobs and a lesser fixation on local issues from the stations that are still going."
Traffic is to be banned from a road in a Broads village because lorries have been using a potentially dangerous route as a cut-through. Bollards are to be installed on Middle Hill in Reedham to block off access from Riverside at the southern end of the street. Norfolk County Council has agreed to the measures after concerns were raised by people in the village, the Parish Council and Acle County Councillor Lana Hempsell, whose division includes Reedham. They were worried that people's safety was being put at risk because large lorries are sent down the narrow road which has a blind bend, sent down there by GPS sat-nav systems. Officers at County Hall said, "Residents of Middle Hill are currently hampered by motorised vehicles trying to negotiate this narrow 4.2 metre section of the carriageway and large delivery vehicles trying to negotiate the road. There is no footway along this section of carriageway due to the narrow width, so pedestrians must share this road space with all vehicles. If vehicles meet each other head-on, there is no space for them to pass on this single-track road. Coupled with the blind bend in the road, this is potentially a safety hazard." Officers said the blocking off of the road would mean satellite GPS systems would no longer send lorries through the street. People living in the street will be able to get to their homes from the northern end of Middle Hill by using the hills instead. Consultation over the change was carried out earlier this year with four objections. Objectors, who said they had never experienced any issues, said there was no need for the measures because only a handful of vehicles use the road each day. But Graham Plant, the Conservative-controlled Council's Cabinet Member for Highways, Transport and Infrastructure, agreed to install the bollards and bring in a traffic regulation order to ban vehicles.
St George's Day should be made into a public holiday, according to leaders at Norfolk County Council. Senior Conservatives at County Hall are pushing for the government to make April the 23rd a bank holiday to celebrate England's patron saint. A motion has been tabled at the full council meeting on Tuesday for the authority to agree to make a formal request to the government over the issue. The motion has been tabled by James Bensley, the council's cabinet member for environment and waste. Mr. Bensley said, St George's Day is a day that holds deep historical and cultural significance, symbolising the values of bravery, honour and integrity. A national bank holiday would provide an opportunity for communities to celebrate these values and the rich history of England. A national bank holiday on St George's Day would foster a greater sense of pride and unity across the country. It would offer all citizens a chance to reflect on and celebrate the shared identity that binds us together, especially in the wake of significant events such as the coronation of King Charles III. Mr. Bensley, who represents East Flegg on the County Council, added, "A bank holiday would allow local communities to engage in celebratory events, encouraging cultural awareness and economic activity, such as local festivals, fairs and markets, that benefit small businesses and tourism. England currently lacks a dedicated public holiday to celebrate its national identity, unlike other parts of the United Kingdom. In its general election manifesto, Reform UK, which enjoyed a breakthrough set of results in local elections earlier this month, including its first two councillors at County Hall, promised to make St George's Day a public holiday. But who was St George? Very little is known about the life of St George, but it is believed he was born in what is now Turkey in the 3rd century. A Roman soldier, he protested against the Romans' treatment of Christians, which led him to being imprisoned and executed. It is believed he died on or around the 23rd of April in Lydda, now Lod in Israel. He became England's patron saint from the 14th century, but had probably never set foot in the country. The association with him battling a dragon came about due to a 15th century book called The Golden Legend, in which he protected a town being terrorised by the winged creature. The flag of St George, a red cross on a white background, is England's national flag. St George's Day has traditionally been marked by celebrations on April the 23rd for hundreds of years. However, as was the case this year, Christian churches sometimes observe it on different days to match their calendar around Easter, when saints' days aren't marked.
A scatty lady with a heart of gold who'd been widowed for 41 years died of natural causes after her health conditions worsened, a court had heard. Irene Casella, aged 80, was found dead inside her home in Seafield Road North in Caister on September the 16th last year. At an inquest into her death, a statement from her daughter, Cheryl Casella, was read to the court. She described her mum as independent and always busy, saying that she continued knitting, reading and cooking her own meals, even after several falls and deteriorating health. But she added that her mother had lost faith in her GP and didn't like exercises she had been tasked with. It was only during the past few years that Mrs. Cancella, who was a widow for more than 4 decades, became housebound and had several falls. Norfolk Coroner's Court also heard how the retired school cleaner, who was born in Camberwell in London, would say of the exercises, "I ain't no bloody flamingo." On the day of her death, her daughter had found her unresponsive at home. Despite the best efforts of the emergency services, she was declared dead there. A GP report heard that she had a thyroid in her throat, which doctors had been aware of. Following tests, it was decided to monitor her conditions every 6 months. Her last examination of the thyroid took place on May the 1st, 2024, and the review determined that it was normal. The medical cause of death was given as asphyxia and massive enlargement of thyroid and food particles in the esophagus. Area coroner Samantha Goward gave a conclusion of natural causes.
A Norfolk school has introduced golf to its curriculum in a groundbreaking partnership. Cliff Park Ormiston Academy in Galston, and part of Ormiston Academies Trust, has joined forces with Majestic's Golf Club to bring the sport to its students. The initiative, called Little Sticks, will see Key Stage 3 students gain hands-on experience and coaching from professionals affiliated with the LIV Golf Circuit. The programme aims to teach life skills and empower students through golf, while also fostering personal development traits, such as resilience, confidence and motor skills. Harry French, principal at Cliff Park Ormiston Academy, said, "This is a groundbreaking opportunity for our students. By integrating golf into our school programme, we're giving young people access to a sport that is both physically engaging and mentally enriching." Becky Briggs, head of PE at Cliff Park Ormiston Academy, said, "This is an exciting opportunity to get our students engaged in a new sport. And Little Sticks has gone far beyond my expectations of golf. The equipment is fantastic, and the range of skills and games are both inclusive and highly accessible."
Alcohol has been blamed as one of the main causes for serious accidents on the Broads, following a number of deaths on the waterways last year. Officials have said that drinking while on the water, especially when this is combined with not wearing a life jacket, poses perhaps the biggest danger to boaters. But despite making huge efforts to raise awareness of the risks, the Broads Authority rangers face an ongoing battle to keep people safe. Four people died after entering the water in 2024, and there were a further 13 near misses caused by people falling off boats. High-profile incidents include a man from Skegness falling off a boat at Great Yarmouth Yacht Station in August last year, who was not wearing a life jacket, and had consumed between two and three times the legal drink drive limit of alcohol. Another incident occurred at Wroxham Broad, in which a 25-year-old man who had consumed alcohol drowned after going for a midnight swim. Members of the Broads Authority discussed the deaths and near misses following the publication of a health and safety report for last year. It sparked calls for the authority to consider launching a Don't Drink and Drown campaign to raise awareness. Rob Rogers, Director of Operations at the Broads Authority, said alcohol was the biggest cause of incidents, but it acknowledged it was a difficult thing to control. Broads Authority rules require hire boat firms, including paddleboard rental companies, to ensure customers have watched a number of safety videos before embarking on the water. These include messages about the importance of wearing life jackets and the risks of alcohol. But once on the water, not everyone chooses to follow these rules. Harry Blathwaite, chair of the Broads Authority, noted that there is, quote, no legislation against stupidity. Other perilous incidents highlighted by members included children dangling their legs off the bow of hire boats while travelling at speed without wearing life jackets. The authority says it has installed new signage at high-risk areas such as Great Yarmouth Yacht Station, and it will continue to promote safety awareness on the Broads.
A 91-year-old Army veteran was the guest of honour at a VE Day party. The event, organised by Vision Norfolk and Blind Veterans UK, was held in Great Yarmouth to celebrate the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe. Veteran Tony Wilkin, who served as a wireless operator in Egypt from 1952 to 1954, shared his experiences with the group. Diagnosed with macular degeneration a decade ago and registered blind since 2017, Mr. Wilkin now volunteers as a telephone befriender for those living with the condition. He said charities like Blind Veterans UK and Vision Norfolk are so important in helping people living with sight loss to tackle the isolation and loneliness which can happen as a result of their sight deteriorating. For ex-servicemen and women, the opportunity to share their experiences with others who have come from a services background can be really helpful. Having that military experience in common provides a really good starting point for building social relationships. The party also featured a recording of Winston Churchill's VE Day speech.
And well done to Vision Norfolk for organising another great event. Now, the UK's biggest outdoor arts festival is set to return to Great Yarmouth. Out There Festival 2025 will boast a lineup of more than 60 artists, 18 world premieres and 17 international performances, as well as many shows produced by local people. The festival will take place in Yarmouth from May the 28th to May the 31st and will feature outdoor arts, circus and cultural celebrations. now in its 17th year. That's hard to believe, isn't it? 17 years already. The festival continues to bring together local and world-class talent. Joe McIntosh, artistic director of the Out There Festival, said, "This year's festival promises an extraordinary celebration of creativity, innovation and entertainment, delivering a one-of-a-kind experience for audiences of all ages. Many events are free or donation-based, while others are ticketed, and visitors are urged to come and enjoy and support them however they can. The festival will feature a variety of free events, including the Beach of Dreams Village and a Beach of Dreams, a national community project led by Kinetica and supported by Historic England. This immersive experience will take visitors on a guided journey through Great Yarmouth's rich heritage, culminating in a display of 800 flags on the beach. Other highlights include a witty circus performance by Big Wolf Company, a family-friendly comedy show by Daryl J. Carrington, and a visually stunning production by Many Hands Circus. The African Choir of Norfolk will also perform, led by Zimbabwean singer Anna Mudeke. International performances include a show by Salate Producciones and an outdoor performance by Undercloud Sea." Did you like the continental pronunciations there? "There will also be several shows made in Great Yarmouth, including a mythological dance duet by Van Hool Dance Theatre and a production by Matthew Harrison. Marcin Rodwell, Communications and Development Manager from Out There Arts, said, "Great Yarmouth is gearing up for an unforgettable weekend at Out There Festival 2025, where the streets of the seaside town will come alive with magic and world-class entertainment. And we're delighted to host so many world-class international performances, as well as our very own talent from Great Yarmouth." Asa Morrison, Chief Executive of Visit Great Yarmouth, said, "The Out There Festival is the UK's largest outdoor arts festival, showcasing a brilliant mix of national and local artists, and we're thrilled that it's staged right here in Great Yarmouth. As principal partner of the event, we're looking forward to seeing another unique and diverse programme, filled with art, comedy and performance, which we know will have crowds flocking here in their thousands. It's the perfect addition to our May half-term offering. The festival has consistently delivered a circus and arts experience, attracting thousands of visitors each year. With its bold programming and unique performances, the festival guarantees that audience will witness one-of-a-kind spectacles that cannot be seen anywhere else in the UK. So for more information or to book tickets, visit the Out There Festival website at outthearearts, all one word, outthearearts.org. UK. And let's keep our fingers crossed that they get some sunshine this weekend.
Yes, let's hope so. And continuing on the art theme, he is an artist who fled war-torn Ukraine when his studio was destroyed. But when award-winning sculptor Alex Lidigovsky arrived as a refugee in the UK, he was determined to carry on working. And now, staying true to that promise, the 64-year-old has visited a Norfolk town to oversee the installation of a sculpture he created for a new public art trail. Mr. Lidigovsky was forced to leave Kyiv with his family after the Russian invasion in 2022. Since then, he has been granted membership into the prestigious Royal Society of British Artists and has continued creating sculptures. Among the pieces is the 7-metre tightrope walker, which will form part of the new trail due to open next month in Great Yarmouth. The artwork was made in Kyiv and shipped to the UK via Germany before Mr. Lidigovsky travelled from London to assemble the sculpture on Trafalgar Road in the grassed area west of Marine Parade. Mr. Lidigovsky said, "Circus, for me, has always been primarily associated with acrobats performing at great heights. Walking on a tightrope epitomises the highest level of harmony and balance, and the sculpture represents a silhouette figure on a tightrope. The vertical position of the tightrope walker figure will be maintained by a counterweight, which also serves as a sail, propelling the figure into motion with the wind, creating the illusion of a real acrobat. The sculptures will provide a free outdoor gallery and circular walking route from the marketplace to the seafront, taking in St. George's Road and Park, Regent Road and Church Plain. Each artwork will have an interpretation board for people to learn more, and installation of all the pieces is on target to be completed by the end of May. A free map of the trail will also be available to guide people around. An official opening event is being planned for next month to mark the completion of the trail, with full details set to follow. There are about 15 of Mr. Lidogorsky's public artworks on the streets of Kyiv, and his pieces have also been showcased at the Winter Sculpture Park in Bexley in southeast London. Great Yarmouth's Trail has 11 sculptures focusing on maritime and medieval history, arts heritage, seaside, transport and energy. The trail also features a 12th artwork, a section of tiled paving outside Christchurch, created by Great Yarmouth's Represent Project to reflect the cultural impact of the town's Portuguese community.
No, don't stop the carnival. No, don't stop the carnival. You'll never find a better way. No, don't stop the carnival. We've got to sing the night and day away. No, don't stop the carnival. Sunshine above is breathing. Sunshine above is breathing. You'll never find a better way. No, don't stop the carnival. That's a thing the night and day away. No, don't stop the carnival. This is England on a winter's afternoon. There is no sun, there's just a pale and tired moon. The shivering sparrows on the smoking chimney tops, and all the children suffer from cold and flu and rain. Don't stop the carnival. No, don't stop the carnival. You'll never find a better way. No, don't stop the carnival. Let's take the night and day away. No, don't stop the carnival. Sunshine above is dreaming. Sunshine above is dreaming.
So here we are in May, and May, as we know, is the fifth month of the year, but in Roman times until 153 BCE it was the third month, as the year began in March. For many people, May is a favourite month, bringing long light days, flowers and leaves, and the promise of summer ahead, along with two bank holidays. As we know, of course, May doesn't necessarily mean summer weather, although this year alone we began the month with a mini heatwave, which was quickly followed by cooler than average temperatures with northerly winds and grey skies. And then, the next thing, was another prolonged spell of exceptionally warm, sunny weather. The name May comes from a Roman goddess, Maia, who was said to personify the idea of growth both in nature and business. Since ancient times, the start of May has been seen as a herald of summer. Even now, some European countries celebrate the 1st of May with dancing around a maypole. In Germany, the night of the 30th of April is known as Walpurgisnacht. In rural communities, bonfires are lit to celebrate the departure of winter. Some countries celebrate Labour Day on the 1st of May. This dates back to a violent riot in Chicago in 1886, when workers' unions were fighting for an eight-hour day. In England, the early May bank holiday wasn't created until 1978. Now, as we know, it falls on the first Monday of each May. For some people, May the 4th has become known as Star Wars Day, as it sounds like the phrase from Star Wars, "May the Force be with you." In Mexico and parts of the USA, the 5th of May is known as Cinco de Mayo, the date when the French army was defeated in Mexico in 1862. Nowadays, Mexican culture is celebrated on that day. May is associated with some old sayings. One such is, "Ne'er cast a clout till May is out." The full version of this appeared in the Whitby Gazette in 1855. "The wind at north and east was never good for man nor beast, so never think to cast a clout until the month of May be out." The meaning of this, of course, is that the weather in May can be unpredictable, as already mentioned, so it's advisable not to put away your winter clothes until the end of the month, in other words, when the month is out. However, nowadays there's another interpretation, which is that we shouldn't put away our warm things until the May or hawthorn blossom is out. And this happened in April this year, so the phrase isn't particularly helpful. More recently, May has become associated with the idea of no-mow May, as environmental associations encourage us not to mow our lawns, in order to help the wildlife and wildflowers. It's certainly a good excuse not to mow the lawn, especially in what, according to the Environment Agency, may turn out to be the driest May since 1956. A rather more superstitious phrase is "marry in May, rue the day," which suggests that people who get married in May might live to regret it. Apparently the superstition dates back to Roman times, when May was associated with the Feast of the Dead and the Goddess of Chastity. Needless to say, the phrase can be discounted immediately as a superstition with no factual basis. Perhaps we should end on a more positive note. A quote about May is, "The world's favourite season is spring. All things seem possible in May. Whatever the weather, I hope you're having a good May."
Thank you, Alison. More gems as always from you. Staying with the month of May, I go back to my old favourite of on this day in history again, the 19th of May. And here's a little story about someone probably we know of, we know the name, we may not know a lot about. In the end, it was his love of adventure that killed him. T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, had displayed a restless energy to live a life less ordinary since childhood. He'd travelled across the Middle East as a student, narrowly avoiding a gruesome end on a few occasions. During the First World War, he had fought in the Arab Revolt, liberating swathes of Arabia from Ottoman rule. He attempted to fill the void left by the end of the conflict with a passion for motorbikes. "A skittish motorbike with a touch of blood in it is better than all the riding animals on earth," he declared. But on the 19th of May in 1935, he died from terrible head injuries sustained when a week before he had crashed. Not whilst exploring Arabia, but on a country road in Dorset. He'd attempted to avoid two boys on bikes and lost control of his motorcycle. Perhaps he was travelling too fast. Certainly he liked high speed, and his machine, a Brough Superior, was capable of it. He paid a terrible price for his new passion. "We have lost one of the greatest beings of our time," lamented Winston Churchill, while the New York Times called it a tragic waste. The neurosurgeon who treated Lawrence, Hugh Cairns, realised that the brain injuries Lawrence had suffered would have probably left him senseless and unable to speak, even if he had survived. Not long afterwards, and it could scarcely have been a coincidence, he published research entitled "Head Injuries in Motorcyclists: The Importance of the Crash Helmet." More than 100 motorcyclists were dying every month, many more than nowadays, on much quieter roads in the 30s. It was hard, though, to point to clear statistical evidence, until, that is, the army required that its dispatch riders wear helmets. After that, the fall in motorcycle deaths was plain to see. Nevertheless, it was not until the 1970s that the law in the United Kingdom required civilian motorcyclists to wear helmets, and the libertarian argument that all who undertook dangerous activities were free to choose was lost.
An NHS service which saw just 29 patients in an entire year has been spared the axe after bosses shelved a raft of potential cuts. NHS Norfolk and Waveney, the region's integrated care board, announced an abrupt end to a consultation into the future of a host of primary care services. Among these was the out-of-hours GP service, which offers face-to-face appointments for patients overnight and weekends. Under the abandoned proposals, the service would have ceased to operate in a number of locations across the county, with patients instead sent further afield. Among the services being considered for closure was the base in Fakenham, which currently operates between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. at weekends. The service, which was set to close down under all the options in the consultation, saw just 29 patients in 2024. But now it is set to be saved, alongside all other existing out-of-hours GP bases in Norfolk and Waveney. An NHS Norfolk and Waveney spokesman said, "We can confirm that all existing bases used for the out-of-hours GP service will remain open for the foreseeable future. These bases are not solely used for out-of-hours services. They are shared spaces that support a range of healthcare functions. While usage may vary between sites, including at Fakenham, the premises are part of a broader, flexible approach to providing accessible care across the region. Currently, out-of-hours GP services are provided at 9 different locations across the region. These are King's Lynn, Norwich, Great Yarmouth, North Walsham, Thetford, Beccles, Lowestoft, Fakenham and Dereham. All of the sites operate 7 days a week at varying times, with the exception of Fakenham and Dereham, which treat patients at weekends only. In total, 39,129 patients made use of the service in 2024, compared with 54,957 5 years earlier in 2019.
A Norfolk MP has been accused of using anti-Semitic language in a leaked footage on a parliamentary staff meeting. As you might have guessed, this is Rupert Lowe, Great Yarmouth MP, and he commented on the size of a camera being used to film him, calling it a Jewish camera, in the clip obtained by The Guardian. It's believed to have been recorded in February or March, likely when he was still sitting as a member of Reform. He's since been suspended from the party, as we know, following a string of allegations about his conduct, which he vehemently denies. The footage shows Mr. Lowe sitting on a green sofa during a meeting, saying, "In days gone by, you'd call it a Jewish camera, but that would be politically incorrect, because it's so small." His comments spurred others in the room to laugh, and one woman out of sight of the video said, "Career over in a second." Mr. Lowe appeared to agree, repeating, "Yes, career over in a second." The MP has dismissed the accusations of anti-Semitism, describing the story as a ludicrous smear campaign. However, Jewish groups have condemned his language. A spokesman for the Board of Deputies of British Jews said, "This is bizarre, an outdated anti-Semitic language which has no place in our politics. Mr. Lowe should apologise for the offence this remark has caused." In a post on X, the Jewish Labour movement said, "Rupert Lowe's anti-Semitic remark is completely unacceptable. There should be no place for his language anyway, let alone in politics. His constituents deserve much better than this." Rupert Lowe was suspended from Reform UK in March after he was accused of making verbal threats against party chairman Zia Yusuf and of bullying. The Crown Prosecution Service said no criminal charges would be brought against the independent MP early this month in relation to those alleged threats. And the MP has accused his former colleagues of weaponising the criminal justice system against him.
A couple has been left out of pocket after Banksy sprayed a giant seagull onto the side of a home they own. Gert and Jerry Coutts, who live in Enfield in London, were renting out the property in Lowestoft when their tenants called them in August 2021 to say that some scaffolding had suddenly gone up on the building. They thought it was the council fixing a chimney, only for the rigging to disappear from the house in Catwick Way the next day. In its place was the piece of artwork, a 14-foot mural of a seagull, later verified to be a Banksy. The tenants were faced with large queues of people around their home, all hoping to take a photo of the artwork. The council wanted to preserve the seagull where it was, at what would have been a personal cost of £40,000 per year to the couple. I'm completely depressed and sick about it, Mr. Coutts told the Sun. I've done everything I can, tried to do the right things, and my wife and I have just had the mick taken. A night watchman had to be employed to look after the wall after someone stole part of it and tried to sell it on Facebook. Another time, vandals were caught with a dozen pots of white paint and were going to paint over it. The couple eventually arranged for the entire wall to be removed at a cost of £200,000. The two sections of the mural were lifted from the side of the building by a crane and taken away on a large low-loader lorry. However, the couple is still forced to pay £3,000 a month to keep it in storage while looking for a buyer. John Brandler, a prominent modern art dealer, said in 2023 that the Banksy work could be worth between £1 and £3 million.
We have to wonder, has the Banksy bubble burst, maybe?
I wouldn't want it on my house.
Now, turning to Norwich City, and their hunt for a head coach has taken another intriguing turn, with Christian Tietz, the latest name linked to the Curragh Road hot seat. The 54-year-old German, currently in charge of Bundesliga 2 side Magdeburg, is understood to be among the names under consideration as sporting director Ben Napper's exhaustive search enters a critical phase. Tietz has built a reputation in Germany for bold, possession-heavy football and tactical innovation, notably using his goalkeeper as an auxiliary centre-back during the build-up play. He led Magdeburg to a fifth-place finish this season, and they scored 64 goals in 34 games, but is reportedly available for a relatively low fee, despite being under contract till 2026. He's informed Magdeburg officials that he intends to leave the club this summer, further fueling speculation over his next move. He was in the away dugout at Curragh Road last summer when Magdeburg beat Johannes Hof Thorup's Norwich 1-0 in a pre-season friendly, and he may have caught Napper's eye in that game. But Jurgen Klopp's former Liverpool assistant, Pep Linders, is also a strong candidate for Norwich City's vacancy, and he's set for further talks in the coming days as part of a process that could include a Colney fact-finding mission. British coaches Gary O'Neill and Liam Manning have also been linked as the search conducted by Napper for a successor reaches the end game. But does Linders match up with Napper's yellow and green vision? When I was planning to leave Liverpool, he said, Jurgen said to me, what is the first thing you're looking for? And I said, a strong academy. I'm a guy who likes to work with talent, said Linders, at the start of a short-lived spell in charge of Salzburg this season. I'm a guy who loves to work with younger players and help them become their best version. That is what my life is about. They need the passion, they need the hunger. Well, he talks the talk. I wonder if he's going to be able to walk the walk. Be interesting to see where City go with that one.
Certainly will. An organist has completed a 10-hour marathon fundraising performance. Matthew Hardy, who began playing the organ at St Peter's Church, Galston, in 1970 at the age of 12, spent nearly half a day playing to raise funds for the overhaul of the church's instrument. The marathon, which took place in April, saw a steady stream of visitors, including the Mayor of Great Yarmouth. Throughout the day, the chorus of St Cecilia sang popular hymns, alongside requests from attendees. The event concluded with evening hymns, followed by a prayer and blessing from Father Alvin. The Marathon Organ Rebuild Fund has so far raised more than £14,000, with more than 200 people donating. The fund will remain open throughout the year, with planned lunchtime concerts and a Christmas tree festival from December the 17th. Mr. Hardy was recently awarded a certificate of honour in recognition of his 55 years of service to the church.
A Norfolk Broads boatyard has come to the rescue of a pair of British rowers after they became stranded in the Pacific Ocean. Miriam Payne and Jess Rowe of the Seize the Day, that's S-E-A-S, Seize the Day Ocean Rowing Team, set off on a charity challenge last month to row 8,000 miles from Peru to Australia. But 350 miles into their voyage, disaster struck when the boat's rudder broke, leaving them helplessly stranded at sea. They were eventually towed back to Peru after managing to radio through to an adventurer sailing around the world. But without a rudder, their own adventure looked to be over. That was until they contacted Broad's boat builder, Southgate's Boatyard, based more than 6,000 miles away in Horning. And in just 6 days, Southgate's Boatyard and its sister company, Ferry Marina, had designed and manufactured four bespoke carbon fibre rudders, with manager Ben Knight flying out to Lima via Schiphol Airport to fit them. This project was a race against the clock, but we knew how important it was, said Mr. Knight. When you set a challenge of this magnitude to row thousands of miles across one of the world's toughest oceans, equipment failure isn't an option. We were proud to offer our skills and support to help make sure the Seize the Day team could continue their journey with confidence. The team have now been able to get their 8,000-mile challenge back underway. Miriam and Jess will spend up to 6 months at sea, rowing up to 15 hours a day. They are raising money for UK charity The Outward Bound Trust, which inspires young people to realise their potential through learning and adventure in the outdoors, partnering with schools, colleges, employers and youth groups.
An illegal small stall selling various random items in Great Yarmouth town centre was closed down and moved on after it was reported to a council. A man and a woman had put out the items they were selling, including sunglasses, trainers and children's toys, outside Poundland under market gates on Monday afternoon. The makeshift stall was reported to the Borough Council, which attended to promptly close it down and move them on. A spokesman for Great Yarmouth Borough Council said, members of the council's licensing team attended a small stall close to market gates yesterday afternoon. A man was given advice about trading illegally, and he promptly moved on. Where the council is alerted to potential illegal trading, our team will respond accordingly to protect the business of stallholders and shops operating legitimately and make sure the regulations are adhered to. In England, selling on the street without a required street trading licence is an offence that can lead to fines and potential prosecution. The penalty for illegal street trading can include a fixed penalty notice, a fine of between £150 and £1,000, depending on the council, and in addition, the seizure of goods. A business needs a street trading licence to place tables and chairs or display goods for sale on the pavement or within 7 metres of a public road.
Stick a party in the pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the van. 'Cause if you want the best ones, but you don't ask questions, then brother, I'm your man. 'Cause where it all comes from is a mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons and the tides of the sea. That is the one that's driving me berserk. Why do only fools in all seas work?
The theme there from Only Fools and Horses, and of course in true Delboy tradition, that was not the genuine article, but a genuine copy, Rodders. Well, that's it for this week's recording, which is copyright of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. A reminder of our website address, which is grapevinegy.org, where the latest edition is always available and also a contact button for getting in touch. So thank you to Alison for this week, and next week your newsreaders will be Desney and Nevia. So we look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe, stay well, and bye for now.